Be the leader that defines the way. Find yourself and others with strategic change. This is The Path to Success. Broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Growth Matters.
Well, good morning. Here we are on another Friday in Atlanta, a little overcast, but we are getting ready for what I know is going to be a great Growth Matters show. Kevin, glad to see you back.
I am back. I missed you last week.
Yes, so. You as well. Glad you're back. So this morning we are going to talk with two people that are very, very knowledgeable about early education and really how it's, of course, important to families and communities, but also its connection to the economic situation in any community. So with us we have Pam Tatum, who is the president and CEO of Quality Care for Children. So good morning, Pam.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good. And we also have Bobby Cagle, who is the commissioner from Bright from the Start with the Georgia Department of Early Care and Learning, DECAL.
Good morning.
Good morning. So I have so many things that I really want the two of you all to help our listeners understand. But, Kevin, I do have to sort of be honest and say that I am on the board of Quality Care for Children, so I'm a little biased, but you're going to learn some great stuff about what's going on in that area.
Well, I'm excited. I think everyone's really passionate about that area right there.
It is. And in fact, it is an area that within Georgia and nationwide, this whole idea of early learning is really on an upward trajectory, because I think people are really understanding why it's important. So before we dig into the issues, let's give our listeners what I like to call the nickel tour of both of your organizations. So, Pam, tell us a little bit about Quality Care for Children and what you all do for Georgia and the Atlanta community.
Well, the mission of Quality Care for Children is to ensure that infants and young children are nurtured and educated. And we really do that in two ways. We work with parents to help them find and sometimes pay for child care. And we work with child care programs to make sure they provide educational care and nutritious meals to kids in their programs. We have three offices, Cartersville, Athens, and Atlanta, and we impact about 100,000 kids a year.
Yeah, and so you do the referral tell us a little bit about that so that people understand what that program is.
Sure. We have the Child Care Referral Service for Georgia, and so we have every legally operating child care program in the state in our database, and a parent can call us or they can go online, and they can search for care that meets their needs. We have information about quality, cost. You can search by location, by zip code, by your route from home to work. So there are a lot of things you can do to find care. The number is 877-ALL-GA-KIDS, or you can also go to our website. We also have an app, and the app will let you search for care, and it includes a checklist so you can evaluate programs for quality.
Great, great. So, Bobby, tell us a little bit about Bright from the Start and DECAL and the role that you and your organization play in this space.
We are the state agency that is responsible for the management of the state's early care and education system. We license and monitor about 6,000 facilities around the state that care for around 400,000 children each day. So we also are responsible for the state's pre-K program, Georgia's pre-K, which is probably our best-known program. Serves 84,000 children over the 21-year period. We've served over 1.2 million of Georgia's children and are just beginning to see some of those graduate from college and get out into the work world. We also run the child care subsidy program. We serve about 57,000 children each month and about 80,000 families in a year's period of time. We also administer the USDA nutrition programs that are in our child care and also adult care facilities. Served about 88 million meals through sponsors like Quality Care for Children last year. And as of July 1st, we'll become the state's home visiting agency as well, the Maternal Infant Early Childhood Home Visiting Program, as it's known. Very excited to take that program, which we think is very well aligned with the services that we offer.
Wow. So got a lot going on. How many people work within the...
We have 276 employees across the state of Georgia. And,
and Pam, how many people are with Georgia, with Quali Career for Children?
About 75 employees.
Okay. So, the show is obviously Growth Matters, and we talk a lot about businesses. And Kevin and I, each Friday, we also kind of hear about things that touch businesses and economic development. So, Bobby, why should a small business person care about this issue, and really how is it connected to corporate and small business environment?
I think it starts with brain development. What we know from many years of research now is that about 90% of a child's brain is formed within the first 4 years of life. We also know that depending upon the kind of experiences the child has, that we can either promote or inhibit brain growth. So providing high-quality early education really begins them on the path to what I see as the economic development pipeline, and the governor oftentimes refers to it in the same way, because we're really laying the foundation for children's education and building the skills that they will need in later life. I've met with Vice President of Kia recently and asked him what their primary concern was with their workforce over the next 20 years. He said, I need a workforce that has social skills, that can get the work on time, that can work in groups. And I said, so I'm your man, because that's exactly where we begin with kids, is in inculcating social skills and getting them the basis they need to be successful in their K-12 education and beyond.
Yeah. Pam, sort of how do you see the influence of the work that you do at Quality Care for Children in this space?
Well, Bobby's exactly right about the child development piece. And so what Quality Care for Children does is we work hands-on in child care programs to make sure they're providing educational care. Children are always learning. And so if it's a good program, then the learning is good. But if it's not a very good program, it actually hurts children. So we want to make sure that children are getting what they need from the very beginning. We know that the children who receive high-quality early care and education will do better in school. They are more like, if they go in behind, they'll fall further and further behind. And we know what that trajectory is like. We know what life is like for a school dropout. So it really starts in early childhood, and that's the place to make the biggest difference. We know that the majority of brain development happens in the first 5 years of life, but if you look at where we invest our educational dollars, 95% of our educational dollars go after a child turns six. So we are really missing a very critical time in a child's educational experience.
Yeah, how I came to have some passion around this this issue, and I do, many of our listeners know that I do consulting with many nonprofits and have worked with a number of organizations in this space. But, I was very fortunate. My mother was able to be at home with me, and reading in our family was very important. After even we got older, we would pass books, mother, father, sister. And I remember, Kevin, when I, I can't actually remember, but I was told that by the time I got to kindergarten, I was reading on a second grade level. And I know that set me up for success later in life. And so, but that was, for me, the luck of the draw, right? I was born into a family that was able to provide that support. So I don't think people have always thought about how important those first few years are and how it sets you up for success.
Well, I completely agree with you, and I have an opposite story where I had learning disabilities and dyslexia, so I had a really hard time learning, and I wasn't a dumb kid by any means, and all my teachers thought I was really smart, and they just thought I was slacking off in the system, but I started to fall behind, like you said. And when you get a kid and he falls behind and then he feels like he's not as smart as all the other kids, I mean, it builds up a psychological block, and these kids start to put themselves in a rut, and they're like, well, this is dumb, I'm not going to do this or try. And they take that love of school, and it just turns into something that they dread doing. So I think what you guys are doing, the points you're bringing out, are huge and make a lot of sense.
Yeah, reading by third grade is a predictor of success in school. And we know that if kids can't read by third grade, there's a 75% chance that they will never catch up.
Then the further extension of that is that a good portion of those will end up in the criminal justice system and in prison. I think beyond just being a good thing for kids and for economic development, it's really a moral imperative that we get children the kind of early education that they need. We have kids who really do enter school and even come to our pre-K classrooms far behind and probably will never catch up. What we know is that reading capability is oftentimes tied to the number of words a child hears in their home environment. There's a study by Hart and Risley that says that the average child in a low socioeconomic household hears 30 million less words by the time they're 3 years old. Wow. than do those in an average household. So what we really encourages just lots of language, lots of reading to children. My parents were both high school dropouts. My mom went to the 8th grade. My dad went to the 10th grade. But somewhere along the line, they figured out that it was extremely important to read to me. And we read every day. So, at the time, I just thought it was so fun and enjoyed reading. Looking back on it, I think my parents, who did not have the benefit of good education themselves, really latched onto something that was genius, and it was just getting as many words to me as possible.
Yeah, Bobby, I want to, if I can, pick up on that to go a little bit personal for a second. You shared, a little bit about yourself just there, but how'd you come to this work?
Well, I was born in North Carolina and was given up for adoption at birth. My parents adopted me from the child welfare system in North Carolina, and I've always really admired the people that helped my parents adopt me, and those were social workers. So I really focused on, in my education and career, on social work, trying to help people help themselves. And so I've been very lucky to be able to move into jobs like this where I can truly impact thousands and thousands of people every day in the work that I do.
Yeah. So, Pam, it looked like I preempted a little bit. Prior to asking Bobby a little bit about his background, you had a comment you wanted to make. So allow you to do that. But then also give us a little bit of sort of why you have so much passion about this.
Okay. Well, yeah, when Bobby was talking about reading to kids, it also made me think about talking to kids. And there is a great YouTube video, if you Google Talking Twins, there's a great video that shows these toddlers talking. They have the same inflection. They have the hand motion. And you can see when we talk about kids learning pre-verbal skills, sometimes people don't really get what that means. But if you watch those two twins talk to one another, it's very obvious what is meant by pre-verbal skills. So, reading to kids and talking to them constantly is really, really important.
Yeah. So now let's segue to the personal for you. And tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to this work.
Well, I'm a social worker by training. I just happen to love young kids, for one thing. But I do, earlier we were talking about my connection with Bobby in terms of adoption. So I actually have a child that I adopted from Vietnam. And prior to adopting him, I was a mentor to a kid who was 6 years old when he came here as a refugee from Vietnam. And when he turned 11 was about the time that I decided I wanted to adopt. And so I talked to him about that, a little worried about how he would feel. I didn't want him to feel displaced. And he said, well, can you get a kid from Vietnam? Because then he could be my brother. And so that's what I did. And so it's a little strange to even talk about him as a child that I mentored, because he's like a member of the family. So I do have a passion for young kids, and I come to the work really more from a social equity perspective, that it is the moral thing, as Bobby said, to do, and it is also the best way to close the opportunity gap for young for kids.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit, or tell our listeners a little bit about, you know, how quality care for children really helps build capacity with child care providers in the state. So take, you know, an example that maybe you can think about and give us a sense of the services and the support that you provide.
Okay. So one thing to know about child care is that it's not a high-profit industry, and the people who work in child care programs don't typically have a college background. What they have usually is a passion for young children. And so we work very closely. We provide training to child care programs, but we all know that training in a classroom is good, but it's not really sufficient. And so not only do we provide the training, but we go in and work hands-on with the staff. We'll go into a program, we'll do an assessment, see what their needs are, talk with the director about their goals for quality and how they want their program to look, and then we will make sure that the staff are prepared and are interacting with the kids in an appropriate way, that the rooms have all the materials and supplies that they need, the toys that are actually the learning materials for young children. Of course, we make sure that they're safe. And I'm sure that Bobby's going to talk at some point about the new quality rated system. And that is a system that allows us to help providers move up the quality ladder. And so what we want is for every program to be a high-quality program. We also work with programs in terms of nutrition. We have learned recently, through surveys we've conducted with child care programs, about the number of children who come from food insecure households and how important the meals that they're getting in child care are. And so we want to make sure that those meals are nutritious. We sponsor the child care food program, which allows us to provide a reimbursement if they meet certain nutritional requirements. But we also have launched a program that will provide training to cooks. The chefs that work in child care centers, or the cooks, as they call themselves, and we're trying to change that, typically don't have any kind of training. I mean, they come to it naturally from, this is how I cooked at home, and this is how I'm cooking to feed the children. We had a launch of the program just this week, and it was very interesting. One of the cooks said, you know, my strategy was always just throw a pound of butter in it. Anything you throw a pound of butter in, the kids will eat. So, you know, we're even working on that level to make sure the kids are getting what they need.
Yeah, so I know, Bobby, you have partnerships with a lot of organizations like Quality Care for Children, and Pam mentioned the quality rated system, which is really something that I think from a Georgia standpoint, I'm really excited that we are understanding the importance of that. So some of our listeners may not really have heard of that term, quality rated. Tell us a little bit about that.
You know, I think in business terms, most businesses think in terms of continuous quality improvement. And this is truly a continuous quality improvement system that is designed for child care facilities. It's designed to help them focus on the very most important things that relate to quality for children. A couple of those being having a goal-directed activity that helps children learn, and a plan for how you do that and how you move a child through the needed knowledge. We also really want to see families engaged in that same process in the facility, learning how to teach their children at home and carrying that home and having the child learning on a continuous basis. Quality Rated also is designed to be a source of information for parents. And so the clear intention is that we go in, we rate them, very similar to what you would do in a hotel system. So we give them either 1 to 3 stars, with 3 being the highest level of quality that they can attain And that is an indication to parents as to what they can expect there. And so our goal is over the next couple of years to have all of the providers in the state participating in this system so that parents can call the 1-877-ALL-GA-KIDS line. PAM staff can tell them in their neighborhood where those quality rated providers are, what the level of quality is, and also what the specifics of the program are that really fit the needs of that family. So this is a system, again, that assesses quality, improves quality, and communicates it to the parents.
And I love that how you framed it as continuous improvement, because a lot of times we have people that come on our show that are purely in the business space and don't always think that government and or nonprofits are doing those types of things that are business principles for good business, when whatever the sector or the field is. So it's nice to hear some of those principles, you know, finding their way into this early learning space. So how's quality rated going?
Well, we have about 21% of the providers in the state that are participating on a voluntary basis within the first couple of years. We have 310 rated at this point in time. So if you went to qualityrated.org, you would be able to see all of the quality rated facilities in the state. What I'm advising parents to do at this point in time is to ask their provider, are you quality rated? And if you're not quality rated, why not? Because this is a system that helps you improve quality. It also delivers financial incentives. So we have built in financial incentives for businesses, and these are primarily small businesses, to improve quality and continually improve quality. And we're being supported, as I know Quality Care for Children is, philanthropically as well. So we, over the first couple of years, have had $6 million in donations that go directly to child care facilities that participate in this. We're looking to begin a new campaign for about $18 million more within the next couple of months.
Wow. Okay, so lots of fundraising going on for a very good cause. Pam, how are you finding, or what is the biggest challenge that you're seeing as you're helping child care providers move to this quality rated system?
Well, I think the biggest problem really is the providers are all very excited about it. So we've been overwhelmed by their interest, as I think Bobby's department has as well. So that's all great news. I mean, this is something that they have wanted for some time because, you know, as a small business, they don't know how to differentiate themselves from the child care center next door. Mm. So this really,
it's a competitive.
Yes. And in fact, just speaking this week with a child care program that had vacancies and had one classroom completely closed until they got quality rated, and now they have a waiting list.
Wow.
Right. So, but, you know, the biggest challenge in this work really is making sure we keep quality affordable, and that is a very difficult thing to do. All of the things that improve quality, you know, more teachers in the classroom, better trained teachers, less turnover in a program so that kids have consistency in the teacher, all of those things cost money. And, you know, within the quality rated system, there are financial incentives. And then Quality Care for Children launched a new program when the economic downturn hit to help programs financially. Because what we discovered was that quality was declining as programs were struggling financially. We, you know, in nonprofits, we're always waiting for the money to fall from the skies. And
does it?
It hasn't happened yet. So we began to ask the question, you know, in terms of the early care and education community, how can we use the money that we have better? And so we launched a program called the Georgia Alliance for Quality Child Care, have about 720 members right now. And we have negotiated discounts for programs. As Bobby said, they're small businesses. They don't have the economies of scale. They don't have the purchase power to negotiate a good deal. So we have negotiated with several vendors that serve the early care and education community to get discounts. And then we also provide all kinds of business tools. You know, every program is working on a family handbook. Every program is doing policies and procedures. It's not the best use of their time. And so we have tried to make all of that easy for them, and the program's going very well.
Yeah, so it sounds like that's sort of building infrastructure behind this network of providers to give them economies of scale and ways to be efficient that, you know, one by one by one that they're not able to accomplish. I'm going to kind of ask that same question of you, Bobby. So your department clearly does a lot of things and has a lot going on with all the emphasis that Georgia's putting on early learning. What's your biggest challenge when you're having that night that you can't fall asleep readily? What's keeping you up?
And I think my staff would tell you the same thing. I'm fairly impatient. What we see across the state, and we have studies to back this up, is that the vast majority of providers across the state, although they do really care about children, they are of low quality. And when I say low quality, in order to translate that for the general public, what I would say is these are people who do babysitting. They keep a child while a parent is away at work, and the parent comes back, and hopefully the child's safe when they arrive back there. When we're talking about quality, what we're really looking for is an environment that, through play, really allows children to learn, and that it's goal-directed activities that are really fun to children. The children really should not ever know that there is a lesson plan going on. But the lesson plan, indeed, is on the wall. The parent knows about it, has associated activities that they can take home and do with the child. That is high quality, and so that's what we're shooting for. So my heartburn comes at not being able to move fast enough, because I know that there are kids out there who, with these high-quality services, we can change their life trajectory. We can have them reading on grade level by third grade. We can have them graduating high school, going on to college, getting good-paying jobs. We also know from studies that all these things really impact in ways that we never thought about before, including long-term health. So a child that gets early, good quality early childhood education stands the better chance of having long-term health. And so I think it's a matter of urgency, and I really go about my job trying to communicate that urgency trying to get the kids that need this the worst, get it to them the quickest.
Yeah, you know, as we've been talking this morning, you know, a lot of things that you're talking in terms of the research and the statistics and the things that both of you do are definitely around providing that solid foundation for children, so that changes the trajectory of their life and that they can be productive citizens. I think the other, I'm always thinking about when I have a guest on that is either in the nonprofit space or in the government sector, is again helping our business leaders and our business professionals understand the connection. And as you were talking, one of the other things that I know we need to be thinking about is, you know, obviously if your child is in a child care situation and you are worried about them or you do not feel like it's high quality, that distracts you as a parent from, you know, the job and the expectations that you have from a workspace. And so I think that's the other issue or the other problem that you're solving, is that by helping parents choose good quality child care early learning for their children, it allows them to have peace of mind. And that peace of mind then translates into hopefully that they are going to then be more productive for their employer and what, you know, they're doing while they're away from their child. And I don't think we can miss the importance of that and what that means for business in terms of absenteeism, productivity. All of those kinds of things are a part of this issue as well.
You know, we see in multiple studies over many, many years that one of the keys to employee satisfaction in companies is their ability to have good quality child care. Many companies, the real companies and the brands that you think about here in Georgia have latched on to this and understand this very well. Coca-Cola, Home Depot have their own on-site daycares, and they are shooting for the very highest of quality for them as well. I recall a study that quoted Jim Goodnight of SAS, who said that probably the best thing that he had done for productivity in his company in his career was to put a high-quality early learning facility on their campus where his staff could walk down during a break, look in, and see that their child was fine and doing things that they enjoyed, and they walked back to their job. They were more productive after that.
Yeah, Pam, do you see and hear that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we've talked with a lot of companies over the years about things that they could do. So an on-site childcare center is really the ideal. You know, even if a company can't do that, there are a lot of ways that they can support their employees in their ability to provide high-quality childcare for their kids. You know, when I talk sometimes with CEOs about families needing financial assistance, they tend to think I'm talking about someone other than their employees. Mm. But there are if you have an employee that's making $30,000 a year and they are paying the average cost of childcare in Fulton County, they're spending 30% of their income before taxes just on childcare for one child. So we don't want families to feel forced to choose the cheapest care. We want them to choose the best care. And so companies can help by providing either financial assistance in terms of vouchers or scholarships for their employees, or even just by setting up the childcare dependent savings accounts where parents can put in money pre-tax and then take that money out to pay for their childcare.
Yeah, that's a really great point that you made, which is I think a lot of times when we're talking about these issues, and if you're someone listening who doesn't have the issue, or you run a business and you feel like, you know, you're paying your employees well, it seems to be working, that it's some group over there other than the people that I associate with day to day, because in many ways this is some of these issues are hidden issues, right? Because as a worker, you know, I might be trying to mask that I've got this challenge because I don't want that to, you know, reflect right. negatively on me. I think the other sort of hidden issue here, and I'm going to go back to something that you said that you're doing, it's the whole food insecurity for our youngest citizens and families. I think that that's also a big issue that impacts productivity and things that are going on. So tell me a little bit more, Pam, about how this is coming into play. And then, Bobby, I'd like to understand how your department addresses that and kind of what you're also said that you're doing with the home and health workers. So,
yeah, well, you know, we know that there are about 1 in 4 young children in Georgia who live in food insecure households. And what that means is that they're not getting enough to eat. You know, they may skip meals. The meals don't have the nutritional value that children need. So we know that this is a problem. And during the economic downturn, we began to see that families that you wouldn't suspect were food insecure actually were. And sometimes it was a matter of, you know, trying to hang on to the house, you know, and trying to hang on to the car so you could go to work. And where do you cut? And some families were cutting in terms of the food. So what was happening were childcare programs were reporting to us that kids were coming to school hungry in the morning,
wow.
and especially after a weekend. The children were very hungry, and they were eating more, and they were sometimes asking to take food home. And so what we know is that children who are food insecure, who are not getting what they need nutritionally, are sick more often, and they don't learn as much, as fast, or as well. And so,
yeah, when I'm hungry, it's not pretty good.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, you know, we had always worked a little in this arena, but it wasn't such a big part of our work. But we began to realize that it doesn't matter how great that child care program is if the children are hungry. So it began to take a bigger place in our portfolio of programs.
We look at this in a research way from brain chemistry. So the Center on the Developing Child at Harvard University has looked at this, and this really is a biochemical reaction in the brain that occurs. Everyone who studied psychology has seen Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Well, the basic is that you have to have food, you have to have shelter, and basic security. So this is really the brain's adaptive ability that says, I'm going to direct all my resources to what I need most. So the biochemical reaction is, I'm hungry, I need food now. I need food now. This is called what Dr. Shonkoff calls toxic stress, meaning that children that are hungry or are in households where they're subjected to maltreatment are constantly in a fight or flight state. Their brain, their body is all directed toward how they escape that danger. So making sure that children have food, that they have the right kinds of food, and they have it at the right times of day, really does, in many ways, predict what they're going to learn when they get to school, to daycares. I think back many years, my mom always fed me a great breakfast when we were going to have standardized testing. There's good reason for that. Having children have good nutrition each and every day and not be hungry perpetuates their ability to learn as opposed to inhibiting it when they're hungry.
And I'm really glad Bobby brought up the issue of toxic stress because it gives me an opportunity to talk about another important role of child care programs. So when children are living in homes where there is toxic stress, what they need is a relief from that. And sometimes the child care provider is just what they need, that they can go into an environment where the fight or flight reaction can subside. And child care programs in many ways are the safety net for young children living in poverty.
Wow. Well, this is all really powerful to me. And also what you guys are doing is you guys are taking it the first level with these kids and their development. And I know people focus on during elections, all these things, bigger problems like poverty, homelessness, all this stuff. But if you guys correct it from the first step, it's going to solve these problems down the road. I don't think that's what people realize.
Right. Early investment.
Early investment. And you have a famous economist, James Heckman, who is a Nobel laureate, who has studied this from an economics perspective and says that there's a return of between $7 and $19 for every dollar invested in early childhood education, very well respected in the field. And we believe that early investment prevents later investment in things like corrections and things like trying to help children overcome learning problems in school and being withheld. It costs twice what it costs to put a child through one grade to repeat a grade. So the costs there are huge. And what we know is if we get the right kind of early education to a child, then they can avoid those instances of being held back in school. We can avoid those costs and reinvest those in other areas or, give a tax break to the people who are paying the taxes. And I think everyone can agree that is a good thing.
Yeah, you guys are teaching these kids to fish instead of giving them fish for that term. So you're giving them the tools they need early, and then they can teach themselves, and they'll be able to learn and adapt to any of the environments that the world throws at them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I want to shift a little bit and talk about an award that I know Quality Care for Children recently received. Again, it's when you think of nonprofits and you think of governmental agencies, you're thinking about the mission and the passion of that. But I love that within Atlanta, the Community Foundation also does an award that looks at how well the nonprofit runs as a business, so to speak, and it's called the Managing for Excellence Award. And I know that Quality Care for Children received the award for this year. So tell us a little bit about that, Pam. One, how exciting that must be. And for our listeners, a little bit about, you know, what the award is and what it entails.
Sure. Well, as a board member, Michelle, you know that we tried three times for this award. And so we were very excited when we received it. We don't give up easily on things. So we stuck with it. The whole process of applying for the award, though, is really a learning process. You know, there are many standards, the best practices in the nonprofit arena for you to meet to be able to qualify for the award. And really they look at your strategic plan. You know, how well do you plan for the future? To what extent are you focused on your mission? You know, are you being innovative? How are you using the money? Are you accountable? You know, do you measure the outcomes of your programs? How do you manage your money? I mean, they look at all of those things to determine if you are truly managing for excellence. They also, I think in our case, looked at our partnership with the state being, I think, our most important one. You know, nonprofits cannot do it alone. And no single organization can do it alone. So we partner with other nonprofits. We partner with the state, all in an effort to achieve our mission.
Yeah. So I know. And so that award happened in
December, I think.
December. And so you know, Bobby, you mentioned that there's philanthropic community involvement. So I know that you are going to leverage that idea of being a well-run organization to help bring more resources to the space. And I guess, Bobby, as I think about, you know, well-run government agencies, you know, how is it, tell our listeners a little bit about, you know, the business of running that agency. You know, what's your biggest challenge of you know, being a leader that has to meet goals and objectives, limited budget, never as much as you'd like. So what does that mean for you as a leader in running DECAL?
You know, DECAL is a nearly $700 million a year operation. And so a good part of it is assuring that we are using the funds the way that they're intended to be used, whether it be federal sources, state sources, or the lottery. I think we have an obligation to the public, to the taxpayers, to the parents and children of the state to use every dollar to its best effect. So we spend a whole lot of time looking at the strategies that we can use to move the system, and that's really what our agency focuses on, getting the programs out to the public through high-quality organizations like Quality Care for Children. And then continually focusing on how we can improve those programs. We invest a whole lot in research to look at the work that we do. And I'm looking for research that doesn't just say, you're doing a great job. That's not useful to me. I'm looking for research that says, you're doing well here, you can improve here. And so we continually revise our strategic plan and really focus on what we can do as an agency to make sure that these programs are well run.
You know, one of the things both of you mentioned is about partnership. And so clearly these two organizations, you know, have to be in partnership. But the other thing that strikes me about the early learning community, and it does feel like there is, you know, community is the right word, is that there is a lot of partnership and there is a lot of collaboration, whether that's a nonprofit to nonprofit, nonprofit to business, public, private. You know, I see a lot of different spaces, and I don't know that I necessarily see that degree of partnership. So, you know, I'm curious, do you have a thought as to sort of what creates that in this space? Because I would imagine that has helped raise the profile and allowed all of the organizations in this space to achieve, you know, their goals in a more efficient way. So, you know, talk a little bit about the whole partnership component and how important it might be, Pam?
Well, I think you're right. We do have a lot of partners. I will say it wasn't always this way in early care and learning. I can remember times when people would say, particularly the leaders at the legislature would say, if you guys could just get on the same page and ask one thing, you might have a chance. So I think there was a lot of work done in the early care and education community to come together as a group and to focus. And I think the research has really helped us. I mean, the evidence points to what needs to be done, and there is an urgency, as Bobby said. And so I think we are committed to working together to make a difference.
You know, the collaboration in the space is amazing. As social workers, that's one of the things that you're trained to do, is to attract people that can collaborate with you. We truly believe that there's no way as a government organization that we can deliver all the services that need to be delivered in early care and education in and of ourselves. And so we are dependent upon thousands of community organizations around the state to actually deliver the services. We see ourselves as an intermediary. I trace this in large measure back to the genius that Senator and former Governor Zell Miller had, along with legislative leaders at the time that they created the HOPE Scholarship and Georgia's pre-K program. They designed it in such a way that it is not just government to government, which in pre-K, many states only fund school systems. In this state, we started out with a mixed model where you had public-private partnerships. And I think through the years, that has built relationships that otherwise would not have been there. That goes all the way up to today. I work for Governor Nathan Deal. His expectation is that I work with everybody in the community, and that I not only work with those that are currently interested, but I get out there and find those that should be interested and bring them to the table. So I think we're very fortunate in this state to have had some visionary leaders in the past that really set the stage for where we're at.
Yeah, I think, what's really interesting about early care and learning, if you look at the partnerships and who's involved in this, is we have some very unlikely suspects.
Say more about that.
I mean, Bobby mentioned Heckman's work, from University of Chicago. He's an economist, a Nobel Prize-winning economist, who did the work to show that for every dollar invested, you save at least seven. So, we have the Federal Reserve Bank in Minnesota did a lot of work. We have Army generals who are now on board who are saying, we don't have the soldiers we need for the future because the educational system is not producing them. And the best way to start that pipeline, the best place to start, is in those early years. So it's been interesting, having been in this field for so long, that it's a field that really went from one, was kind of like social workers and kindergarten teachers. And now we've got chambers of commerce, we've got army generals, we've got economists, and it's all because the evidence is so very clear.
Wow. Great. And at a time when evidence and research sometimes is not really valued on some topics, it's nice to see that we're using it to anchor some of the things you're doing in this space. So, as we begin to wind down on the program, Bobby, tell us a little bit about how you see DECAL, if I were to have you back 18 to 24 months from now, some things that you really are expecting to do over the next 18 to 24 months.
Department recently received a $51.7 million Early Learning Challenge grant. That is focused on improving the system overall. It's aimed at getting money to providers to increase rates, to help parents be able to afford the kind of care that they need, to help teachers go back and get increased education. So what I would hope to see 18 to 24 months from now is the vast majority of providers participating in our quality rating system, that we will have many more people that are working with our children on a daily basis that have either attained their first credential in early childhood education or gone on to get a degree of a higher nature. So I think you can look for great things. Georgia is on the cutting edge of early childhood education, and we're going to stay there.
And I think that's a great message. The message is about, you know, quite frankly, Georgian education is not always innovation and at the top of the list. But in this area, you know, we actually are one of the states that people are looking to because we're doing mm-hmm. some innovative things. And I think that that message sometimes gets lost in the space. So, Pam, tell us a little bit about things that are happening that you want to highlight for quality care for children.
Well, you know, we are going to do everything we can to help Quality Rated be successful. We're very excited about that. The thing that we are most concerned about in the future is how we keep quality affordable. Because, you know, if the children who need the care most and could benefit most, and those are children from low-income families, if they don't have access to it, then all the work that we're doing is for naught. So, you know, we are looking for strategies and ways to address that issue. That's kind of our number one goal for the future.
Okay. But we would be remiss if we didn't say that next week. This is where it helps to have an inside friend here on the radio with you. Something's happening next week for Quality Care for Children.
Yes, I'll put in a plug. I'll be happy to.
Twist your arm.
Every year we have a fundraising event called El Día de los Niños, and it's a day to celebrate all children, but to celebrate them in sort of an adult way. So we have nice cocktails, nice beverages, and food and a silent auction. And a salsa band this year.
Oh, okay.
So this year the event is on the 24th. It's next Thursday. It starts at 7 o'clock. And it will be at Ventana's, which is downtown on Baker Street. Mm-hmm. And people can find out more information about it by going to our website, which is qualitycareforchildren.org. And they can find out more about the event, and they can buy a ticket. And, you know, this year our focus is really on the food insecurity issue and how we bring more resources to bear to help low-income children who are in food insecure households get what they need so that they can succeed in school.
Great. So I guess I need to put on my salsa shoes and
you
tell
do.
Carlos to get ready. I'd like to also just get a sense from each of you, if you were talking to a parent who is struggling with the issue of quality child care and early learning, you know, give them a few tips that you would want to make sure that they walk away from our conversation today to help them as they, you know, maneuver those waters.
Well, I would say, first of all, call 877 all GA kids and let us help you. One of the great things about the quality rated system is it makes it easier to choose quality. It makes it easier to determine the quality of a program. But, you know, I always tell parents that they are choosing quality every time they drop their child off. So they need to understand what some of the key elements of quality are, and they always need to be vigilant. It is, you know, the state does a great job of monitoring child care, but the primary responsibility falls on the parent to make sure their kid is getting what they need. So I would say, you know, call us, let us help. Start early. We are always shocked when a parent calls us and says, I'm going back to work in 2 weeks and I need child care for my infant. The really good programs, some of them have up to a year waiting list. Mm. So before you get pregnant, you might need to get on the waiting list. Infant care is the hardest to find and the most expensive to purchase. So in terms of choosing quality, I would say that those are the two most important things.
I would say, first and foremost, check to make sure that these facilities are licensed. If you are at the facility talking to them about your child being cared for, ask them to see a copy of their license from the start. That is a base level assurance that health and safety is being attended to in the facility. I would also ask them again, are you quality rated? And they can get all this information before they go by going to the Quality Care for Children website or call in 1-877-ALL-GA-KIDS. And they can give you the kind of information that is very particular to your family as well, not just the generals. They're licensed, they're quality rated at Star Level 3, for instance. They can also say they also provide overnight care for families who have work schedules that take them through the night. So just a great resource at Quality Care for Children. We're so happy to have them as a partner.
And if we wanted to give that business professional out there that's a business owner or in an executive in corporate life, and we wanted to, that, you know, they have an interest, you know, how might they support this space, you know, from the business community? Is there one or two tips that you might give to our listeners?
Well, I mean, we think that all the HR departments need to be educating their employees about 877 All Georgia Kids. I mean, it is a free service. And as you mentioned earlier, if parents don't have quality, consistent care, we see increases in absenteeism and loss of productivity. And so it's in the business's best interest. But also, you know, in terms of long-term benefit and a company's investment in the kind of community we want Atlanta to be, we think that all companies should also be philanthropists and should invest in creating a strong system of early care and learning.
That's exactly where I was going to go. The suggestion I would make to them is either support philanthropically Quality Care for Children or a like organization, or if you want to get more involved directly, they can talk with our organization and we can link them with a local center. So they can develop a relationship there, understand what the needs are in that facility to improve quality. They can even look at the quality improvement plans that we work out with them so that they can help partner with them and possibly establish relationships where their employees can have their children there at reduced rates and everybody benefit. So we welcome partnerships, have a number such as Dole Packaged Foods. They sponsor one of our quality criteria, which is health, physical activity, and good nutrition. So they provide a benefit to the quality-rated providers in giving fresh packaged foods to the providers and also giving coupons for free food to the parents in those facilities. So that's just one example of how a company can get involved and do some really good things for children.
So both of you at some point in the show have given us, our listeners, a way to be in touch with you. But just to make sure that if they didn't have a pen and paper ready previously. So, Bobby, tell us again how they can reach people at Bright for the Start and DECAL.
At DECAL, if you want to go to our website, that is at decal.ga.gov. The number there is 404-651-7432.
Great. And Pam?
Well, the easiest way is to just call 877-ALL-GA-KIDS, and that is the referral line, but someone there can get you to the department that you need to be, where depending on your need. They can also go to our website, which is qualitycareforchildren.org, and they can read all about our programs and what we have to offer and how they might get involved.
So, Kevin, as you know, we're almost getting ready to go off the air, and so it's that time to ask them the key question. So this is the question that I leave all our guests, our listeners with, and I ask all guests. So think back to your 20-year-old self. And if you could tell your 20-year-old self something today, given the wisdom and the knowledge that you have, what would you tell your 20-year-old self? Silence.
Take your dad's offer and go to law school.
That's a really good one. I think I'd tell myself to slow down. I think I was at 20, I needed to slow down and think for a bit. So I think I would give myself that advice.
Okay, and Bobby, I have to just follow up. And why would that be the advice that you'd give your 20-year-old self?
Well, my dad offered to pay for my law school. I insisted on getting out and working. I became a Child Protective Services investigator at very low pay. Once I got into the work world, there was a gravity there. So I had to go back and get my graduate education while I was working and also pay for it myself. So
yeah, the pay for yourself part, Bobby. You clearly were not thinking that one through.
Yeah, that's the only questionable decision I know of that he's ever made.
Yeah. Well, you all have been great, Kevin. Hopefully, you've learned quite a bit. I know you don't. I don't think you have children.
I don't, but my college roommate, one of my best friends, he just had a kid 4 weeks ago. So this information is going to be good for him, so I can pass that along.
Yeah. So join us next week here at 10 o'clock, where we talk about all things growth. And the reason we do that is because growth matters.